Welcome to the Heart Journey podcast with Dr. Barbara. I am Dr. Barbara Jean Losove. I'm a minister and coming to you as a minister, totally from a Christian worldview. But I also happen to be a psychologist. And so I love where ministry and psychology, you know, Christianity and psychology mix. And so we're going to go into the topic part two of repair when sorry isn't enough. All right, y'all, we're talking about repairs. And I have to tell you this. I have fallen three times in a week. All right. Granted, it's been super cold in North Carolina and we've had a lot of ice. So the first two falls were on the ice. All right. So the second fall, I really, really hurt my tailbone, which affects how I walk. All right. Now the third fall happened when I was going out of the garage, trying to turn my hips real quick, which didn't work the way they were supposed to because of the tailbone injury. All right. So at this point I have a bruised wrist, a big bruise on my arm, bruises on my legs, a tailbone injury and a knee injury. What happens? My hips don't go around fast enough. And then I fall again. And this time I twist my ankle. Y'all. Oh my gosh. Okay. So here we are talking about repair. And I already had a neck thing going on. And so you should see me, like I'm wearing like a little neck brace, heat on my tailbone, cold and putting my foot up. I haven't been out of the house for days. Y'all, repair is so important. It's not enough to just be like, oh, I'm so sorry that that happened. I actually need repair. I need to be made whole. And so we're talking about being made whole. I want to share with you a story from my friends, Bob and Audrey Meisner, Doctors Bob and Audrey Meisner. They are both Christian counselors, ministers. They are amazing. But let me share with you their story, because today we're talking about repairs from affairs. We're talking about healing from affairs. We're talking about repair and making amends when the person's not available. We're talking about friendship breakups, and we're going to have some beautiful encounters at the end. All right. A Christian story of betrayal, repentance, and repair. Bob and Audrey Meisner were the kind of couple everyone wanted to be like. They had this beautiful marriage. They met young. They met in Bible college. They loved God. They longed for intimacy with Him. They married. They got involved in ministry. They loved their children. And here's what Audrey said. We had the kind of marriage people would look at and say, that is what I want someday. They had pastored a church, worked in Christian television, and were leaders, not just in their church, but in their city. And so from the outside, everything looked really good. But we've been talking about from codependence to Christ dependence, right? Well, listen to this. Underneath the success, something dangerous was forming, in particular on the triangle of pain and with regard to stonewalling. Audrey noticed early in the marriage that Bob's communication style was direct and confrontational. And so she wanted to preserve peace. She was also maybe a little avoidant in her personality type. And so she made an inner vow that she would not speak out loud things that she didn't like or was uncomfortable. She said, I decided to do everything possible so that Bob would never be upset with me. All right, someone is relating to that, listening to this. So she became the performer, the pleaser, the fixer, the one who swallows her needs. Now, what happens when we do that? Y'all know, needs open up. Also, resentment opens up, and it gives the enemy topos. So their ministry grew busier, television demands increased, and she just became so exhausted. If you've heard her speak, and I think we did have her on Flashback Friday recently, she just became so, so tired, just pushing on. Years went by with her continuing like this, and a young man from their church began to spend time with their family. And so it was innocent at first. He just began to spend time. It felt innocent. He was playful. He was energetic. He was good with the kids. But eventually, he began offering Audrey something that she wasn't getting from any place else, and that is attention. He would say, man, does anyone else know how much you do? You do so much. And it felt like a cold drink to a very thirsty soul in the desert. So she began to notice, trying to look good when he came over, make excuses to see him. And she told herself she was in control, but she began to lie to create time alone with him. And what started emotionally became physical. The affair only lasted 3 weeks, but it was it was devastating, right? Because here we're in the sacred core. As Christians, marriage is a covenant, and it's in the sacred core. And so the weight of infidelity is often stronger for us. And in fact, the weight of what she had done did collapse on her. Audrey ended the relationship and faced the most terrifying moment of her life, telling her husband of 17 years the truth. Oh, ouch. She couldn't even say it, beloved. She whispered it to him. And Bob described the moment as absolute devastation. He thought, wow, she never even loved me. It was devastating to him. And beloved, this was not a small mistake. It was an overwhelming betrayal. However, instead of running, Bob contacted a marriage counselor. They flew out to Arizona, to Phoenix, and the counselor didn't minimize Audrey's sin. Sin is sin. But he did refuse to let Bob scapegoat her altogether. And he actually confronted Bob and said, you've been spiritually lazy. And so Bob realized that in all his preaching and teaching and ministry, he had neglected his wife. And so he gave him this instruction to start praying together every night before they went to sleep. And they did. They prayed together. They hadn't done that in years. So they are starting to come back to in training with the Father. Think about our previous podcast on this topic. And they would just say, God, we need you. We need you. And beloved, repair began. They wept and prayed and wept and prayed. Repair began actually with radical transparency. And when there's been an affair or when someone has is coming clean on, for example, a sin pattern that is a betrayal, we need a disclosure day where there's full disclosure with the right supports in place. We don't just leak it out. So they had no secrets, no hiding, and no spiritual bypass. But then there came another shock. Bob had had a vasectomy, so he could not impregnate her, and she realized she was pregnant. Bob said, everything in me wanted to punish her, but he knew that baby needed a family, and so Bob chose to stay, to protect, and to repair. They resigned from ministry, moved, and they told their children the truth without blame and without lies. Now, let me tell you how he told the children, because he told the children. He did not, this is the mercy and the grace of God here. Hear this, because God has this kind of mercy for you. He literally threw a blanket over Audrey and told the children. He didn't tell her he was going to do that, but he did not want her to see the children's faces when he told them. And he told them instead of her. Wow, that is so powerful. Y'all, when the baby was born, Bob gave him his own name, Robert Theodore Meisner. Theodore means divine gift. And Bob said, I never want my son to question whose boy he is. Today, they minister. Their marriage is stronger than ever, not because of the betrayal, but because of the deep healing process that they went through that went far beyond dealing with the betrayal, but to the underlying problems that set it up to happen. Okay, so infidelity is a character issue. It's a sin. It's how she dealt with the problem in the marriage. But the problems in the marriage still needed to be dealt with. And because of truth, humility, repentance, and grace, they built back what was broken. Audrey says, because of Jesus, I don't get what I deserve. I get what he deserves. Beloveds, this is a story that doesn't minimize sin, but it maximizes grace and repair. And it shows that we can move forward. We can move forward and repair even under devastating conditions. All right, so let's talk about where we've been. We've talked about forgiveness, and we've talked about how it's essential, because when we forgive, we remove topos from the enemy and we become like our Father because we are forgiven. Repair is what builds the relationship or restores order inside the relationship or in you or in the situation where the person was harmed. I think about, again, my broken ankle, which actually just fired up a second ago. So I'm lifting it, I'm elevating it. But my ankle didn't just need for me to be careful that I don't fall again. It actually needs repair. It needs love. It needs attention. It's not like a small little trip where I'm like, ooh, that was weird. I wish I hadn't done that and then move on. I am deeply injured in my ankle and my tailbone, and they are requiring intense repair. And some situations are like that. We also talked about Jacob and Esau. We talked about amends, direct impact, and repair restores function. And that repair is not saying I'm sorry, but it's doing the right thing after the rupture. We also talked about repair being a spiritual discipline. Our Father sent His Son to make the world whole. And as His child, we are world whole makers, right? We are peacemakers. We are helping the world to be whole. So we're going to talk today about infidelity. We're going to talk about how to repair. We're going to talk about overbonding, underbonding. We're going to talk about friendships, and we're going to talk about stats on infidelity. We're going to talk about how to heal after infidelity. We're going to talk about the masters and disasters. And I have some encounters at the end where you are going to experience Jesus healing your soul. So let's start out. I want to talk again about the masters and disasters. Remember, John and Julie Gottman have studied marriage for decades and coupleships, and they know when relationships flourish and when they don't. So the research shows that relationship masters repair early and often, but the relationship disasters double down on their narrative, double down on the blame, double down on it's you, not me. So the disasters defend instead of listen. Yeah, but I did that because they justify their own narrative. Yeah, but why did I say that? I say that because of what you said earlier. They withhold repair to maintain power. They don't want to come under the lovely umbrella to drink the lovely nurturing drink of humility. And they see apology as loss. They play that zero-sum game where no one wins. And they have an idea of a hierarchy that if I apologize, it's going to take something away from me. When actually humility is such a gift giver, and God dwells with the humble, and those who are pure in heart shall see God. The masters, on the other hand, move toward repair quickly and often. Sometimes they even repair when they didn't make the mistake. For example, let's say a husband is harsh or a wife is harsh, and then the partner says, oh, baby, did you have a hard day? How can I help you? Need a foot rub? Look at that. The person who started with the harsh startup was at fault. The other person could have said, I'm not going to be talked to like that. But instead, they move toward grace, just like our Father. It's like that throwing the blanket over the grace. The masters own impact without collapsing. So they self-soothe. They own their parts. They separate worth from being right. Like, I can be wrong and still have worth. They understand that repair preserves the strength of the attachment and the strength of the relationship, and that repair in and of itself is something that a strong human does. Masters understand something that disasters do not understand, that repair does not cost authority. Think about the spiritual authority. It restores it. When we're meek and when we're humble, when we're in peace, we have the most authority. So remember, there's no hierarchy. We're all one in Christ, believers at least, and everyone else is welcome to come into that. And so we entrain with the Father and not with a spirit of pride or a spirit of blame or a spirit of fear. Let's go back to some of our talk about chemistry. Codependence is not bonding too much or bonding too little. So let's talk about bonding too much and bonding too little. So codependence is bonding without stability. So in chemistry, there are unstable bonds. And these bonds, think about this in terms of codependency, they react strongly. They shift easily, they depend on constant reassurance, and they collapse under stress. Whoa, that's codependency. So codependent repair versus healthy repair. In chemistry, every element has a natural way it bonds. Some elements bond easily, some bond more cautiously, some bond very tightly and rigidly, and some don't bond at all. Now, in the natural state of chemistry, this is healthy. It's not unhealthy, but I want to talk about this in terms of attachment because I think this is really interesting. So some elements remain mostly unbonded. They don't share electrons easily. They like to stay separate, self-contained, but they're still whole elements. Relationally, this can look like emotional distance, self-sufficiency taken too far, avoiding dependence entirely. I don't need anyone. So that underbonding for us, we're not made to underbond. This is protection, and repair for underbonding is safe connection. We need to be open to safe connection. What about chemical bonds, chemical elements that share too much? Other elements bond very strongly. They share electrons closely, and that bond becomes a defining feature. And so the element loses flexibility, becomes dependent on the bond to function. Y'all, this is codependency. Relationally, this looks like overmerging, losing your voice, feeling incomplete without the other, and repair attempts that are driven by panic and not peace. So here we need to restore individuality within connection. We need to make better bonds, bonds that preserve identity, allow flexibility, and withstand stress and stabilize the structure. When an element is stabilized by the right environment, it no longer bonds out of desperation. So in human terms, who's our primary bond? Jesus. When we are primarily bonded to the Lord, we don't underbond to stay safe, and we don't overbond to try to survive or stay alive. We can repair without panic, without bitterness, without instability, and we can be Christ dependent. Okay, so let's talk about relationships. Some relationships won't repair. They just won't. There are lots of different reasons why they won't, but sometimes people refuse to repair. They've been hurt too many times and they're like, no more, or they feel like they need to set a boundary, or maybe they don't want to own their own side and they just want to blame you. So in chemistry, some bonds never reform. The system adjusts, the new structures emerge, but the element remains whole. I want you to think of yourself as an element on the elemental table. You are always whole, even if certain people won't bond with you. We can't bond with everyone, but we always have our primary bond with the Lord. So hear me, beloved, because not every relationship repairs, not every bond restores, and not every story resolves. We can be whole even if the person will never repair with us, or if they've passed on and we can't repair in person on this side of heaven. All right, I want to talk about redox reactions. This is so interesting. So there's a class of reactions called redox reactions, short for reduction oxidation. Nothing is transformed without letting something go. Listen to that. Nothing is transformed without letting something go. So what actually happens is in oxidation, there's a losing of electrons, and in reduction, there's a gaining of electrons. So here's the paradox. The substance that loses electrons enables the transformation. The system becomes more stable, not weaker. So resentment is like excess electrons, tightly held charge. Humility is release, and repair is the reaction where something new forms. Beloved, humility is returning to equilibrium. All right, so Jesus models, honestly, the ultimate redox reaction, although I believe he brings something totally new into the system, but he empties himself. Think about kenosis, voluntary release. He lets go of status. He lets go of retaliation. He lets go of his rights, of his defense, and something entirely new enters the world. Resurrection, beloved. Resurrection is our transformation. The cross is the chemistry of heaven. All right. So we have been in the last podcast in particular we've been talking about repair when there's a shared safety. Now, definitely Dr. Bob and Dr. Audrey's scenario is where there was the trust and the trust and the commitment and a lot of things in the relationship house, the structures of the relationship house have been blown apart, but especially trust. And so we're going to talk about repair when something sacred has been broken. And I love their story. So beautiful. And there are many forms of these deep wounds where it's hard to repair because there's not a shared safety that both people are moving toward. Because like with Dr. Bob and Dr. Audrey, they were both moving toward it. But in terms of clergy abuse, sexual abuse, intimate partner violence, child abuse, so hard, right? And so if you have received those things, received is not the right word. If you have undergone those torturous, terrible things, I'm so sorry. And yet I still want to encourage you to work your way through the heart journey process to forgiveness, because it will set you free. And if you're someone who has hurt others, we're going to talk about that as well. And what do you do when they won't repair with you? But beloved, I want you to know, I do ache for you and the pain that you've gone through and want to see you whole. I want to see you get a copy of the Heart Journey book and journal and begin to walk through that. And the next time our Heart Journey community and mentoring experience opens in the late summer, early fall, I want you to join if you are a female. We'll also be working on the male version of that. Okay, so let's talk about affairs a little bit more, because they happen in 25% of marriages. And in a Christian marriage, we're talking about breaking not just damaging the marriage, but getting into the sacred core, because as Christians, we see the marriage as sacred and covenantal. It is in the sacred core. It's not external like a work relationship. So an affair is a structural injury to the house. And we've already talked about it is a nervous system trauma. Remember, Tachin tells us the two nervous systems become one. And so when a betrayal like this happens, the partner who didn't have the affair does not overreact. They have a very big reaction, as they should, because their attachment system has been shattered, trust has been broken, and expectation of safety is shattered. And so here, building trust or forgiveness cannot be demanded. We need to rebuild the sound relationship house. So here are responsible, widely cited stats on affair data. 20 to 25% of marriages experience infidelity at some point, and those are just the ones that admit it. Men and women now cheat at nearly equal rates, so that gap has closed. And infidelity occurs across religious and secular domains, and equally so in Christian marriages. Beloved, yikes, this should not be so. Affairs are now listen to this though, anyone, not anyone, but a lot of people can be susceptible to affairs. It doesn't justify them. If you are struggling, if you are tempted, open up to a pastor that you trust and get under accountability, get into a Christian 12-step group and start working a heart journey book with a mentor. Do what you need to do. But affairs are more likely under periods of emotional distance between the two partners. Think about Bob and Audrey. High stress. Major transitions, so that could be illnesses, that could be births, that could be moving to a new house, poor boundaries, and untreated attachment wounds. So there you go. Now, let me tell you the good news. 60 to 75% of couples who actively pursue structured repair after an affair remain married. And couples who engage in therapy, accountability, and transparency often report deeper intimacy than before, stronger boundaries, clearer communication, and greater emotional honesty. But healing is not automatic. You got to work hard for it. So I do want to talk to you about trust, because trust rebuilding takes 18 to 36 months on average. And healing is not linear. Triggers can appear and progress happens in waves. And so we continue to be transparent. We continue to say, I'm profoundly sorry. And we continue to make space for the triggers, because they are going to reappear. And an apology is not enough. After an affair, the betrayed partner often experiences symptoms similar to PTSD. Hypervigilance increases. Of course it does. Trust cues are disrupted. Like the same thing, like you're going out for bread, could be interpreted as you're going to meet the other woman rather than you're being helpful. And memory becomes threat-oriented. And so often the person who had the repair feels like, why can't you just move on? But we really need an understanding that the rates of PTSD post-affair are quite high. And in addition to that, when it's a repair that's in the sacred core, it feels like a violation of a holy domain. And so then we're grappling sometimes with our relationship with God as well. God, why did you let this happen? All that is quite normal. And I'm talking about affair, but probably some of you are also thinking about other things that have happened to you in your life that you weren't expecting, that that happened quickly, that you were shocked that it happened, and it hurt you at your sacred core, and you're working to repair. And I want to encourage you that a third of the Psalms were written from lament. And so you can heal, do it with the Lord and with a trained Christian counselor or a good trained pastoral coach. And I do pastoral coaching as well. All right. So deep repair requires five non-negotiables. One, full truth. And this is over time. I mean, you tell the full truth at a disclosure, but these steps are over time. There's one time you tell full truth, everything up to the bedroom, not details about what you did, but everything up to the bedroom. Secondly, ownership without defense. Ownership without defense. Three, empathy for the injured nervous system. Four, radical transparency, continuous and over time. And five, mutual discernment. Both of you need to work to keep third parties out of the marriage. Okay, so let's talk about stages of healing. Those are the five non-negotiables. Now let's talk about stage one of repairing after affair is stabilization. We stop the bleeding. Before healing, the injury must stop. So this includes ending the repair completely, no hidden accounts, no ambiguity, no secret contact. It's done, it's finished. Everything is out in the open. No secrets. Secrets will only re-injure. All right, stage two, full truth and ownership. No trickle truth. All right, we don't trickle out the truth. We don't still lie about some things or cover over some things. It all needs to come out on a disclosure day. And it would be best if this happens with a trained Christian counselor who is trained in sexual betrayal, or a good pastor or pastoral coach who is trained in it. So repair collapses when everything comes out slowly and we keep re-injuring and re-injuring and re-injuring. So trickle truth re-injures the betrayed partner. And ownership looks like clear facts, no minimization, no blaming marital problems, no spiritual bypass, no but you. But we go all the way up to the bedroom. If you begin to tell your partner all the things that y'all did in the bedroom, it's going to become torment for the other party. All right, number three, empathetic attunement. We learn to heal and hold the other injured nervous system. And this could be, by the way, these steps work too if there's a big financial betrayal, if someone has a debting problem. And I do want to encourage you, if you have a debting problem, there's Debtors Anonymous that you can go to, as well as Christian 12-step groups. I would combine the two. There's also Sex Addicts Anonymous that you can go to. If you are Gamblers Anonymous, there are all kinds of betrayals that can happen in marriage. And we do a full disclosure and ultimately be working with hopefully Christian counselor, pastor, and your sponsor. But we have empathetic attunement. So we listen without defending. We validate pain without correcting. We don't correct the narrative. We just hear, listen, and have deep, deep empathy. Now, you can't get into self-condemnation, which is a temptation, but we do have empathy. We tolerate anger and grief by the other person, and we reassure without demanding forgiveness. All right, now you're going to need your support if you're the one who was the betrayer. You're going to need your support team to help buoy you up because this can be a hard phase. Stage four, transparency and accountability. Trust is rebuilt through predictability. Beloveds, the research shows you can rebuild trust 18 to 36 months. Now, trust is not rebuilt from the things you say, but by what you do and don't do. It is rebuilt through consistent access and visibility, total transparency, not through promises, but through actions. This includes open devices, clear schedules, accountability partners, therapy, willingness to answer repeated questions. And this phase can last months to years. And it's not a failure. It's not a failure here. If it seems like it's going on a long time, it is repair. Stage five. Now we're getting somewhere. Meaning making. Why did this happen and what must change? So research shows that couples heal more fully when they understand the vulnerabilities that existed. So this is not blaming anymore. This is, okay, how did we let this happen? Like Bob and Audrey, they weren't praying together. They weren't connecting. They weren't dating. They were working too hard. They weren't connecting heart to heart. So they need to identify these things. They need to also identify attachment patterns, address boundary ruptures and problems in the marriage, rebuild intimacy intentionally, start building those love maps and start building those rituals of connection. All right. And understanding the context doesn't justify the betrayal. All right. But we do need to understand the context. And stage three is rebuilding a new marriage. We don't restore the old one. We let go of the old one. Remember our bonds. We let go so something new can form. So the goal is not to go back, but to build something truer, more beautiful, more healthy, more whole, more stress resilient. Remember, every relationship has an allostatic load that it can handle. And so we're increasing the window of tolerance that this relationship can stay in, can handle. We have deeper intimacy, more emotional honesty, stronger boundaries, clearer communication. All right. So what predicts successful repair? All right. So research consistently shows that repair succeeds when the betrayer shows sustained humility. Ooh, humility is gold, my friends. Two, there is zero entitlement to forgiveness by the betrayed. Transparent is ongoing. Both partners engage in support, therapy, and community. Now, individual therapy without couples therapy, you're more inclined to divorce, the research shows. So you must have couples therapy as well. The injured party retains agency, so they don't come under control. And repair fails when the betrayer pressures for quick forgiveness. The injury is minimized, shame replaces accountability, or responsibility is shifted onto the betrayed partner. Okay. Now, let's talk about divorce and unwanted divorce. And I have to be honest, I've been through unwanted divorce, and it is incredibly painful because it is in that sacred core. And for us as Christians, especially those that got married to a Christian, as a Christian, there's this felt sense that we're making a covenant and we feel this marriage is forever. This is forever with the Lord, this side of heaven, with this person in the Lord. And so sometimes it's really hard to let go and it's super painful and it is a process. And often there's not good closure. There's not good goodbyes. And in fact, sometimes things really go off the rails. And that is when couples are separating, divorcing, and they get into what Isolina Ricci calls negative intimacy. Okay, so positive intimacy is those love maps, you know, we're building that sound relationship house. But negative intimacy is when we use bitterness, hatred, jealousy, envy, wanting to be vindictive, wanting to blame the other partner. That's when we quantumly still stay entangled with that partner, but we do it through the negative. And of course, in doing that, we're giving the enemy territory, topos. So positive intimacy includes warmth, mutual trust, reciprocity, emotional safety, a felt sense of we're on the same side. Negative intimacy is conflict, control, blame instead of curiosity, control instead of trust. And so when we split up from someone, we often want to see them in the worst possible light, and we don't have access to their good behaviors anymore often. And so it's easy to really villainize them. But this negative intimacy keeps your nervous system hijacked with negative, corrosive activation. It keeps the negative meaning alive. It keeps the other person central. It keeps you from healing. And when there are children, this can be incredibly, incredibly bad for the children, obviously abusive even, I would say, because they have a right to feel good about both their parents, and they can feel this animosity. And that negative intimacy can feel more powerful, even than positive intimacy. So we can hold on to it to try to feel powerful. However, especially with children, we want to consider ourselves, Isolina Ricci says, co-CEOs of the children. And so we use neutral language, brief, contained interactions, clear boundaries, and no emotional processing together. There's child focus communication. So basically, and I love her work, Mom's House, Dad's House, and you can look her up, Isolina Ricci. But basically, we are never saying anything to that other parent that we wouldn't say to a business partner or someone that we work with. Okay, so attachment through bitterness, control, fear, and resentment, remember, will give the enemy a foothold in your life, will give you topos. And we don't want to surrender to that. We want to surrender to the God of peace. Beloved, if you have gone through a difficult marriage, it might be maybe it was abusive, but God has healing for you. And I really want to encourage you to keep listening to this From Codependent to Christ Dependent series. Make sure you listen to the episodes from behind as well. And going, you know, this is episode 19 of Solo Podcast, so you can go back through episodes 0 through 18. All right, let's talk about friendships. We're going to talk about friendships, and then we're going to talk about attachment styles, and then we're going to move into living amends when people aren't still with us, and then we're going to move into encounters. So we're coming into the home stretch. So relationships that won't repair. So we have people who tend to over-apologize and people who tend to under-apologize. And it's usually the pursuers, the anxious, that are apologizing and trying to get a relationship to repair with someone who's probably avoidant. Or it could be that we just did the same thing too many times and they're healthy and they just can't do it anymore. But it can cause deep grief because we don't really have a process for friendships dying, right? No one brings you casseroles. There's no funeral. There's no obituary. But it's hard. It's hard. It's when one party wants to repair and the other doesn't. And for some of us, it can be real tempting to keep focusing on what we don't have rather than what we do. I really want to encourage you to look at all the yummy, gorgeous friendships you do have, or the possibilities of making those yummy, gorgeous friendships. Get involved in meetups, get involved in a church and a Bible study and Bible study fellowship and you know, pottery classes, dance classes, et cetera, whatever is nourishing for you and where you can start meeting other people. Work with a pastoral coach or a Christian counselor who can help you with relationship building skills. All right, but repair is only possible in a friendship where there's humility, there's two-way accountability, there's curiosity, and there is a mutual willingness. And prayer, repair is not possible. It's not possible when one person has to shrink or lie or conform to keep the peace. Because here, truth is punished. And, you know, we can't be in love, in peace, and in a lie at the same time. We can't be in God and in a lie at the same time. So I'm not talking about your salvation, but I'm talking about being in the Spirit. So some people will protect their narrative at all costs. Other people want to avoid conflict and want to escape. Other people are just so afraid of the conversation. And so closure, I want you to hear this. Closure is not something someone gives you. It's something that you claim. You already are whole because you know Jesus. You can walk forward and receive with gratitude the relationships he gives you. Now, we do have first, second, and third stringer friends, and our first stringer friends are those that we share almost all of us with. And it's incredibly painful when there is a fracture there. And so I do want to encourage you to mourn, to lament, to work through this, to go through the heart journey steps, to look at the relational patterns in your life to see if this has happened before, to go back in time and look at relationships with other women and your mother and maybe sisters over time and see if there are patterns. I want to encourage you to get the Heart Journey book and journal and really work through your traumas and unmet needs from the past. And if you are anxious and you over-apologize, I want you to turn that down a little bit and give people a little space. And if you are avoidant and you under-apologize, I want you to turn that up a little bit and own your part. Remember about the log in the eye. Remember that Jesus said, don't look at the sawdust in your neighbor's eye, but look at the structural log in your own eye. We take responsibility for what is ours. Unexamined patterns keep repeating. let's say that again, unexamined patterns keep repeating, but examined patterns lose power. And more than that, confessed patterns lose power. If you confess to your mentor or your pastoral coach or your Christian counselor, I did it again, I keep doing it. If you keep having to confess over time, that's going to help you let it go so that you can make something new, bond with something new. You can't repair what you won't name. All right. There are also those two sometimes who pass away and we can't repair with them. And that's incredibly difficult as well. We're going to do an empty chair encounter here coming up. But what you can say is, what is mine, I own. And what is not mine, I release. Let's say that together. What is mine, I own. And what is not mine, I release. I choose wholeness over endless pursuit. I choose Christ's dependence. I am whole by the blood of Jesus. Now, we can grieve that we can't repair with these certain others. That is certainly healthy because spiritually bypassed grief keeps us sick. Remember, every element has an identity. And sometimes, beloved, we need that gift of goodbye, where we can move on, where we can say, I'm moving on. I will no longer be tormented by that. I want you to say that. I will no longer be tormented by, and say it. Today is a new day. Now it springs up. Can you not perceive it? I think that's Isaiah 43. All right. Let's talk about different attachment styles real quick in regard to repair. So with anxious attachment, and we're going back to Bowlby, Ainsworth, Maine, and then the research that's built on that, their work. With anxious attachment, we have heightened threat sensitivity, strong pursuit after ruptures. These are the pursuers, and difficulty tolerating unresolved tension. They often repair too fast, apologize prematurely, take too much of the blame, and collapse boundaries to restore closeness. This is a lot of my history, beloved. All right, now avoidant dismissive attachment, they deactivate and get space under threat, interpret repair as a loss of autonomy, and minimize emotional impact and kind of stonewall. They delay repair, withdrawal instead of engage, and confuse distance and blame of others with safety. And they have a hard time owning their part. Then disorganized has a simultaneous desire for repairing and fear of closeness. And we have these rapid cyclings of repair, come close, go away, come close, go away. And they often initiate repair and then disappear and feel overwhelmed by relational intensity, but then probably, cause some of it too. All right, let's talk about living amends when repair can't be direct. And there are all kinds of situations why it can't be direct. So sometimes the person has died. Sometimes the relationship is unsafe. Sometimes they refuse contact. Sometimes reaching out would cause more harm. And so here is where we make what's called a living amends. And the 12 steps are really good at talking about this, 12-step programs. Here is where you have a sustained behavioral repair. You use your support system. You look at your patterns, you confess your sins, you let go of bitterness, and you take the log out of your own eye, that structural beam, and you stop repeating the pattern. You learn to practice new responses. You repair with others where possible, and you align your life with truth. So if you've been controlling, you practice acceptance and consent. If you were avoidant, you practice presence, even when there's conflict. If you were critical, you practice restraint and acceptance. If you were passive, you practice clarity and boundaries. Amends, living amends say, I can't undo the past, but I refuse to reproduce it. All right, think about kintsugi, where you have a piece of pottery, it's broken, you glue it back together, and then you put gold in the cracks. So you have the adhesive and then the gold. Now, if you have the right adhesive, the thing that was broken can take this allostatic load that it couldn't take before. And the gold makes it beautiful, makes it as if it wasn't broken, but it's something new. It's something repaired that is its own art form, as repair often does. It's beautiful. The gold beautifies. The gold beautifies. Okay, beloved, let us move into some encounters. I want you, if you're not driving or operating heavy equipment, I want you to think about a place where you've been holding back from the Lord, where your own house is divided within yourself, where you've been not living out of your own values with the Lord. Because remember last time we talked about a house divided can't stand. And we talked about South Africa, and we also talked about the Civil War. So where is your own house divided? And I wonder if you could imagine Jesus with you. Take a slow breath in and a slow breath out, and become aware of his presence with you. Notice his safe eyes, his safe touch. And now, I wonder if you could bring forward to him this place, this habit, this pattern, this posture, this place of resentment, this place of shame, this place of self-protection, knowing there's no condemnation. It's like a room in the house of your heart. And I wonder if you could say, Jesus, I give you this room. Please come in this room and make it yours. I surrender this room in my heart. Jesus, now say, I receive your grace and I receive your love, your wholeness, your kintsugi, where the pottery comes back together, glued whole with gold. Say, I forgive myself for what I didn't know. I forgive myself for how I survived. I forgive myself from patterns I'm still unlearning. We want no topos. Jesus says, my blood is enough. I am not divided against you. I make you whole. And in fact, through the cross and resurrection, we are whole. Now, I wonder if you could imagine an empty chair with someone you need to make amends with. Maybe this is someone that you can't make amends with because they're gone, or they won't, or to do so would hurt more people. Now, I wonder if you can imagine Jesus beside you, helping you. And I wonder if you could imagine yourself pouring out the grief, pouring out the truth, and Jesus helping that person to receive it, pouring out the repair. Maybe they hurt you or maybe you hurt them, but pouring out that which needs to be said and giving it all to Jesus, telling Jesus, I forgive. I forgive them. I forgive myself. Thinking about all Jesus has forgiven us for. And releasing that person. Jesus, I release this person to you, and I release myself from carrying that which is not mine. Jesus, I resonate with you. I entrain with you. I bond with you. I let go of the resentment. I let go of the hurt. I let go of the pain. And I let go of the blame and the shame. And I bond with you, Jesus, in all those places. And I take back what is mine that I've been giving away, my agency, my wholeness. Now, lastly, I wonder if you would be willing to think about a person that you're afraid to make amends with. You know you need to make amends with them, and you're scared. Notice your body. Notice the resistance in your body. and ask Jesus to come and prepare your heart. God, soften my heart. Give me the right opportunity for me to make amends with this person. And I want you to ask yourself with Jesus there, what is three questions? What is mine to own? What is not theirs, but yours? What is number two? What is mine to carry? And what, number three, what would repair look like if I stayed regulated and in the spirit and made an amends? And I want you to imagine yourself forgiving, honoring, loving that person, making amends, not contingent on what they say, but contingent on the kingdom of God, coming to them to make them whole. I believe that the Lord is convicting some people of some places where he's encouraging you. The scripture says, if your brother has something against you or you have something against your brother, either way, go make amends. And often the places we have resentment, we're resenting because we actually also, not always, but we actually also have done something and we're putting it all on the other person. Beloved, this is a complicated topic. I hope I didn't step on any toes. Please continue to listen and listen to previous podcasts. I do this because I love you. I want to encourage you to get the Heart Journey book and journal. It's on Amazon and it's sold in places where books are sold. By Dr. Barbara Lowe is my name on the book. And walk through the healing process. Chapter 9 does a lot with forgiveness and amends. And make sure that you have downloaded my little ebook, my free resource on rejection. Go to drbarbaraministries.org/rejection. And I am rebuilding my Instagram, TikTok, and YouTube following and my Facebook following. Would you go to Dr. Barbara Ministries, at Dr. Barbara Ministries on those platforms and follow me? I am starting to make content every week and will notify you of podcasts and things like that. I would love for you to fellowship with me in those places. All right. I love you. I will see you in the next podcast. We're still currently podcasting 3 times a week. You are loved. You are forgiven. You are adored. Remember who you are. And remember, the heart journey is him, and it's for him, of him, through him, and to him. He is the destination and the journey. I love you.